Good morning. It's great to see you this morning. You know, in 3 weeks, we're kicking off something called a journey around here, and it's called the Strong Challenge. And some of you might be saying, whoa, what's a journey? I mean, what is a journey? What does that mean? Well, if you've been here a little less than a year, then you probably don't know that one time a year, this entire community does a deep dive into a topic. And as a result of that, you know, we try to grow ourselves in unique ways. And so for 6 weeks, we're going to do a deep dive into this whole idea of what does it mean for us to get strong. How do we grow ourselves and strengthen ourselves? And it's a cool thing because, you know, these are going to be some of the most powerful, some of the most creative weekends that we do all year as we go through this journey. And then after the weekends, we're going to give you some tools that you can take with you into your week, things that you can do on your own to continue to grow and kind of strengthen yourself. And then we're going to be encouraging you to do community with other people, to get together in these environments that we're calling home teams. And home teams, anybody familiar with like the Indianapolis Marathon? Any runners in here? There's a relay that goes with that. You can run that thing together with a group of people. Or there's another event called Back on My Feet. It's a 42K relay that's about the equivalent of a marathon. You know, you might think, why do people do stupid things like that? Well, they do that in a team environment so that they can do something together that grows them, that trains them, and helps them get strong. And they have fun along the way. And so that's what our home group environments are going to be doing. And so we have a bunch of stuff that are just basically going to help us get stronger. It's going to help us, you know, in those moments when we have storms in life, we're going to be able to weather those better as a result of what we're going to go through over these 6 weeks. You know, you're going to experience pleasures that maybe you never knew were there as a result of these 6 weeks that we're going to journey together. You know, hopefully in your relationship with God, you're going to go to places that you never knew were possible. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be an awesome, awesome series. And so one of the key environments during this strong journey, this strong challenge, is going to be these home environments. And so today, we begin the sign-up process for our home teams. And if you're currently not connected in a community where you get together with people during the week and just talk about some of the things we're learning on weekends and grow each other, then I want to encourage you to consider one of these home teams for the 6 weeks of this journey beginning mid-October. It's going to be one of the most important things we do. There's something that happens when we get together in community with other people who are heading in the same direction, and we grow one another. And it's going to be cool. You're going to do some fun stuff, some unique things, and I just ask you to consider it for 6 weeks. We're going for 100% engagement across the Crosspoint community, a number of groups in Fishers and all surrounding communities, so you can find one that fits your evening, that works for you, or maybe a location that works for you. And so this morning, when we break for our service at the end, there's some tables set up in the back, and you can literally, before you leave this room, you can go back and you can look at some of the groups. You can see the nights that they meet, where they meet. You can even see the group hosts. You can see that these are normal, ordinary people, have a body temperature around 98.6 or so. There's average, ordinary people that are creating an environment for people to grow and being strong. So that's one of the ways you can sign up. You can also go onto our website and go to wearecrosspoint.com/strong, and there's a link there where you can browse our groups online as well. But today begins the open sign-up, so make sure you begin to get into one of these. I'll be championing this for the next 4 weeks as we approach this journey. Well, my name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to have you here today. I'm the lead pastor here at Crosspoint, and I want to ask you to do something we do each and every week. When you came in, you received a weekly. Go ahead and take this out, and inside is a connection card. The weekly has all kinds of information that tells you about Crosspoint, things that are happening around here. On this connection card, I want to ask you to take a moment and fill this out. If you're a partner or regular attender, you know that all we need is your name on here, as well as any information that's changed for you. And if you're a guest today, we just want to say welcome. We want you to know that Crosspoint was created specifically for you. We created this to be a place where you could come and you could explore at your own pace, where, you know, the lights are going to be dim. We're going to give you some great coffee, and you can just kind of wrestle through, beginning with wherever you are in your faith orientation. So if you're a guest today, we would love for you to fill this card out as well with as much information as you're comfortable passing on to us. And then later in our service, we'll ask you to pull these out again so you can just place the card someplace where you can reach it later in an easy way. So today, we're in week number 2 of this series called Heavyweights, and we've been in the wrestling ring. We've been on the mats, in a sense, over these 4 weeks, and we're talking about some of those heavyweight objections that we have when it comes to faith. And, you know, for many of us, we've never been given permission to kind of wrestle through some of these major objections we have, and let's be honest, we all have them. Whether you're just exploring faith, you've been doing this for years, there are heavy objections that we all have, and we have to wrestle through these things, and so we've we've kind of been giving a model for how to wrestle through that. And today we're going to be taking a look at this whole idea of science and God and how do these things merge. In fact, this song, Losing My Religion, that you heard a few moments ago, great, great song, but you know, that's very true for many of us. For many of us, we've maybe had a shipwrecked faith because we were sold this idea that you have to, you know, we're given this bill of faith goods and said you have to believe 100% of everything in order to have a relationship with God. And so we're taking a look at this today. What does science say? What does the Bible say? What happens when they conflict with one another? How do we wrestle through these things? In fact, we heard at the front end of the service, if you were in here at the very beginning when the doors opened, you heard a dialogue between an atheist and a guy by the name of Richard Dawkins and Ben Stein, who is one of the advocates for this whole intelligent design. There's somewhere, you know, between evolution and God has created, there's this place where maybe we can agree and find some commonalities. And they were wrestling through this issue. We're going to continue that wrestling match today. And so before we do that, I want to pray and just ask that God would meet with us here as we begin today. So let's do that. God, I'm praying right now that as we tackle this major issue today, science versus faith, science versus God, God, that you would just help us to see things clearly. Help us to see things that maybe we've never seen before. Help us to hear things that maybe we've never heard before. And God, we're thankful for a place like this where we can come. We can walk into a dark room, and for a little over an hour, we can be exposed to things, maybe experience things, consider things that we can't talk about or maybe even consider in other places of our culture. And so God, as a result of our time here today, I'm going to ask you would just help us. I just ask that you help us to see you clearly. Help us to see truth. Help us to stumble across those points where we say, man, that's got to be true right there. I believe this is truth because we know that wherever truth is, that is where you are found. And so I pray that you just help us to see these things in your name and character. Amen. So science and faith, you know, these two things are often on very polar ends of the continuum. I mean, it's one of these things that in our media, in our culture, I mean, these two sides of the continuum are always picking a fight with one another. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, the science people, you know, they kind of demonize people of faith, and they're like, you cannot check your brain at the door. All right, when you walk into a church, you can't just check your brain and just blindly believe all this stuff when we have data that shows you something different. And then the faith people, they demonize people of science, and they're like, hey, you know, just because you can't prove it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. There's got to be this place where we see certain things, but we also believe beyond just what we can prove. And sometimes, you know, you find that maybe God exists in the middle. Maybe God is in both of these realms. And maybe this is a topic where one side isn't right or wrong. Maybe it's in both of these realms that we see the character of God. And so, you know, as we think about this, sometimes we say, well, you know, maybe God can't be present in science. Well, maybe he is. Maybe just because you can prove something, that doesn't give evidence to God, but maybe just because a scientist can say, well, here's things that point to God or point away from God, maybe still God is in that realm. Or maybe if you live in the faith realm, just because you say, well, I have to believe in things beyond what I can prove, maybe that doesn't really give enough evidence for us to believe that there was a creator. And so the reality is you know, we're left still with these certain elements of doubt, these certain places where we're like, you know, I'm not 100% certain, but I've got to go forward based on what I've seen so far. And this is sometimes how God works. This is how God reveals himself to us. You know, there's this word prophecy that we sometimes see in the scriptures, and prophecy is simply these moments in the Bible where God reveals a word to someone, to one individual. It might be a word of encouragement, it might be a word of hope, it might be a word of truth. And it's one of those things that when someone would get a prophecy, they couldn't necessarily prove what they received, this word of truth that they received. Sometimes it hasn't come to be, and people just had to accept it. And yet here's what the writer of 1 Thessalonians says. He says, do not treat prophecies with contempt, but test them all. Hold on to what is good. Reject whatever is harmful. And so it says right there, it says test it. It says, you know, don't just blindly believe. Don't just check your brain at the door, but you have to test it. Use a scientific process. Measure it. Do whatever you need to do to see if this thing really stands up. And so as we approach this topic today, I want you to know I'm pro-science. I'm also pro-God. And the reality is I could wax on eloquently about this whole deal for, you know, a good part of 30 minutes today, but I am not going to do that because that would not be me giving you my best. And we're all about giving our best around here. So I'm bringing in reinforcements today. I'm bringing in one of my good friends named named Brian Hunt, and he's going to join me on stage here in just a moment. And Brian is a staff design engineer at Beckman Coulter over on the northwest side of Indianapolis, and he's a part of a team that's developing lab instruments for high-sensitivity molecular diagnostics. How would you like a title like that? I mean, he is like head-deep in science, in molecules, he's actually a part of using robotics to automate the processes whereby which you can identify what viruses are in the bloodstream. And it's actually changing the face of technology, because hospitals, lab technicians, doctors will be able to send blood specimens into this process and get results back in a matter of 30 to 60 minutes. So it's changing the face of how we understand our bodies and how we're made. It's fascinating, fascinating stuff. And so Brian is a person that is a scientist, but he's also somebody who is a person of faith. And so I want you to welcome Brian Hunt with me to the stage today. And as Brian comes up and is going to kind of share on this for us, take a look at the screens. Here's a great scene out of The Big Bang Theory. Take a look at this.
If you don't mind, Mrs. Cooper, there's a 305 nonstop back to Los Angeles, and you have no idea how much I want to be on it.
A girl?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good. I've been praying for you.
What are they doing here?
Well, we came to apologize.
Again.
And bring you home. So why don't you pack up your stuff and we'll head back?
No. This is my home now. Thanks to you, my career is over. And I'll spend the rest of my life here in Texas trying to teach evolution to creationists.
You watch your mouth, Shelley. Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Evolution isn't an opinion, it's fact.
And that is your opinion.
I forgive you. Let's go home.
Don't tell me prayer doesn't work.
State that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall,
we built the pyramids, math, science, history, unraveling the mystery, it all started with a big bang.
Hey! Good morning. I've seen that clip several times, I still chuckle. We like to have a mom like that. I mean, she's strong in her faith. I have several friends I hang around with science kind of people, and I have several friends that have given up their faith because of science, and evolution in particular. It's one of the hard things that people wrestle with. If you look back in history, as early as like 50 years ago, and of course back further, people were of faith and of science both. Scientists they believed in God. And somewhere, I was born in the late 50s and grew up in the 60s, and in that time frame, what was happening is discovery of DNA, and started to say, hey, we understand how everything's made now. We know what DNA looks like. We put a man on the moon, and science was just like gung-ho. Yes, yes, we can answer everything. And the world just kind of started to switch to become secular, but it hasn't always been that way. And so today what we want to do is kind of unpack some of that and take a look at some processes to try to figure out how these two Christian faith and science can live and work together. So you saw the earlier video, Richard Dawkins, who's sort of like the poster child for atheism, he said that in his God Delusion book, that belief, that faith is really belief without evidence. Now that is not true at all. People that believe have lots of evidence. God put lots of evidence here. And so let's take a look at some of the processes we use to get this evidence. When you're a believer, what you do basically is, evidence is anything that you observe or comes to your consciousness and you become aware of it. And once you have that evidence, you take that and you work it over, and eventually, when you get enough evidence, it sort of becomes your belief. So you've got a lot of evidence about God, and now eventually you come to the point where you say, yeah, I believe there is a God, okay? And then once you believe, then you start to act upon that belief, and then that's your faith. You're acting upon what you believe. And then once you have been in your faith for a while, you know, because you have that mindset, you gather more knowledge. That knowledge leads to more evidence gathering, and the circle just continues to go. And that's sort of the process. It's not just blind faith that we are Christians. We have faith in things God say, but that doesn't mean that everything we just take on blind faith. And I think a lot of the atheists miss that point, unfortunately. Let's take a look at the next slide here. God actually gave us, Paul said in 1 Corinthians, he said, you know, if Christ hasn't been raised, then basically all this preaching is useless, and so is your whole faith, you know. So there are certain foundational things that our faith is based on, and we all need to take time to wrestle through those doubts and figure out if we believe those things. So for an example of that, you could go through this process and you could say, all right, well, I look at the Bible and it's historically accurate. Historians say there was a person named Jesus and he walked on the earth. The historians won't say that Jesus did miracles, but what they all do say is that Jesus did things that the people at the time thought were miracles, okay? So they leave it open. They don't know what he did, but definitely the people who were there thought it was a miracle. And the same thing with the resurrection. History is very clear that there were hundreds of people that believe he actually was resurrected, okay? And so based on that evidence, we can then believe that we have a good, strong foundation, okay? I think God has put a lot of evidence for us on the earth, and based on that, we have a good, strong belief. But what does it mean to have a belief? Well, in James 2:19, it says that you believe there's one God. Good. Even Satan believes that, and all the demons believe that. So is that good enough just to know and believe that there's one God? Okay? And well, you know, that's why you got to take the next step, okay? Once you believe, you know, back to that wheel of process that we go through as Christians, you got to take the next step and go to faith, okay? I did a study once by Henry Blackaby, and it was called Experiencing God. And then the subtitle was Knowing and Doing the Will of God. And that always got me because it's like, yeah, that's right. You need to know, but then you also need to do in your life. The doing part is really the important part. For example, if your kids misbehave, it's not enough to you as a parent that they knew what the right thing was to do. You really wanted them to do the right thing, right? And I think God wants that in us as well. He wants us doing the right things. So okay, we have this process as Christians then where we get the evidence, it builds our belief leads to our faith, which leads to the gathering of more knowledge. Well, what do you do as a scientist? Well, it turns out a scientist does a very similar thing. Where we have evidence, scientists would give that a name of statistics, okay? When they gather, they go out and they do experiments and things, and they gather statistics about that experiment. So they're going to be put a lot more rigor into it maybe than what the average Christian would do. And they're going to say, I got a control group, and I got a regular testing group, and okay, I'm running these experiments, and 78.4% of the time I get this result. And so it really seems like this is showing me something. And so then they say, okay, now I have enough belief, and so I'm going to, what scientists do is they form a hypothesis, okay? And a hypothesis is like their educated guess based upon the evidence or statistics that they've gathered, okay? And then once you have an hypothesis, then they have to test it, okay? It's not good enough just to have this educated guess. You want to see if it's really right. So they develop a whole bunch of testing that, you know, look at it from various different angles, run tests. You do it in your lab, you give it to somebody else, they duplicate it in their lab, hey, did you get the same results? And once you've done that for a while and everybody's getting the same results, then you say, you know what, we got a lot of knowledge here, we think this is a theory, we really think this is how something works, we're going to make a theory about this, and so then it becomes a theory. It's still not set in stone, okay, but it's we have a really high probability that this is the way things work. And then based on that theory, science will then go and do gather more evidence, more statistics, and continue on that way. So for example, give another example of this. I grew up in Michigan, we had ponds, played a lot of ice hockey, And so in the spring, or in the spring, in the fall, we would always, be anxious to get on the ice. And so what you would do is you try to figure out if the ice is thick enough. And so you would go ahead and you'd ask your friends, hey, do you think it's thick enough? Do you see any other kids on the ice? And then you'd check, see how cold it is. Sometimes you'd ask your mom, sometimes not, depending if you wanted to know what she said or not. And then eventually you get to some point where you gather enough evidence, you say, hey, I think the ice is okay. So then you go out on the ice, okay? And so you've got a belief now. Then when you're on the ice, what we did as a kid, not a very good way, but as you're walking on the ice, you're listening to see, do you hear any cracking sounds? If you don't hear any cracking sounds, then hey, this is probably good. We're good to go. Not the best and most recommended way to do your testing, but it works, right? And so then you play the hockey on there, and that's kind of like when you're in the knowledge theory stage, right? You know it's solid. But then all of a sudden, somebody might notice, and ponds are weird like this, there'll be like a spot over there where there's water. Well, why is there water there? So then also some doubt has come into it. And so then you need to go gather some more knowledge, okay, and make a guess about why there's, or a hypothesis about why there's water over there, And then you work through that, and you say, okay, no, we're good. We know why there's water there. There's the ground's not quite as, it's higher up there. The water's really shallow, and so, okay, we understand that. We're good. Okay, now we're back more in the theory stage, and you keep playing hockey. And that's kind of how it works in science. You keep going around that wheel like that and gathering knowledge as you go. Sometimes you're wrong. You have to veer off in, a different direction. Okay? Another thing scientists do is they do a lot with the statistics, okay? And so basically, if we back up again, they do things. If I have this coin here, and suppose I toss a coin, and I say, is it heads or tails, okay? Now, based on science, there's a 50-50 chance it's heads or tails. And if I ask somebody, I say, oh yeah, 50-50 chance. But the important thing about probability is that, okay, if I look at this, and if you ask me, what's the chance of this being heads and what's the chance of this being tails? It's now 100% one way for me and 0% for the other. For you, it's still 50-50, but I have knowledge that you don't have. And that's a really important concept because in science, basically, it's always based upon the knowledge that you have right now. That probability that you apply to something is based on your observations, the science community's observations. So, for example, you hear, like in Christian faith, you hear things like these near-death experiences where people have died, passed over, and then have been sent back, and they have the story to tell. Well, and this has happened to atheists, too, well-documented stories. And there have been atheists that have passed over, come back, and converted immediately, right there in the hospital room, to Christianity. They completely changed their mind. Why? Their view of the probability is now different. They actually witnessed it firsthand, so they've decided, before I had all these doubts based on these probability and my process and everything, it's gone. Okay, I now have a different probability. I know that it's heads and not tails, and so they change. Okay, and that's all part of the process, both in Christian faith and in science. Okay, all right. So what can you do with science? Well, science is really good at saying yes to things like the way the universe works, okay? It's good at figuring things out. It's good at, like, the making of features. So, like, in a movie, you watch a movie, like special effects. Science is good at, like, behind-the-scenes kind of stuff, like, what's happening? How do they make that movie? How do they do that special effect? Or you see something in the lab. Science is really good at being able to tell you what happens behind the scenes. Why is it doing what it's doing? And science is good, of course, to help you guide your exploration and find discoveries that lead to new technologies, new medicines, things like that. Okay, it's very, very good at that. But what can't science do? Science can't answer questions like purpose, like why am I here? What is this all about? Why do I exist? Okay, science is not very good at that. It's not very good at individual experiences either, or unique events, because you can't really assign a probability to that. If you have a very unique event, an experience with Christ or something that you believe was of spiritual nature, science can't touch that. It can't do anything about that because it's a one-off event. Science just doesn't really address those kind of things. And science cannot give you an answer with absolute certainty, okay, despite what you heard in the video, that evolution is fact. It's never with absolute certainty. There's always a probability associated with it. So what about Christian faith? Christian faith can tell you the relationship between the creator and creation. It's all spelled out for us in the Bible, okay? And then you can look in history and see whether you find the evidence that supports that. It can give you lots of insight into human experience. The Bible is amazing. It's an amazing user manual for life and for you, and it's been around for thousands of years, and it's still very, very accurate, right? Today's problems, same as those we had hundreds of years ago. And it's very good at laying out the moral realm. You know, what is morally correct and incorrect? It's very good at defining that, but you won't find that in science. What can't Christian faith do? It's not very good at telling you how the universe works. I mean, God laid down a few things in the Bible about the universe, but he didn't spell out the details, really. There's some details, some clues, but it doesn't really tell you how it works. It doesn't answer all questions, okay? We don't have all questions answered. There's a lot of unanswered questions. It's not giveable. If I have a faith, I can't just give it to somebody else. If I know something about electricity, I can give that to you. I can show you all the textbooks and give you some examples and some circuits to play with. I can give that knowledge to you. But the faith part, I can't really give that away. Everybody has to grow that on their own. And absolute certainty. Again, the Bible, in the Christian faith, you never have absolute certainty. There is the faith part about it. And then creation versus evolution. The Christian faith, it can't really tell you how to resolve that. That's kind of a hard one. There, we have these fossils and things that supposedly date back millions of years, and it doesn't give us a good example of that. Now, we can look into science. There's a lot of science, like string theory and things, that say that time is relative, and so that maybe the interpretation we're doing of the Bible is not exact. But the Christian faith by itself really can't give you a good answer to that. So let's take a look at some doubts that can pop up. One of the frustrating things about talking about science is there's like thousands of things I'd like to tell you, but we only have like 20 minutes, so I gotta just give you a few. So I want to leave you with one about Darwin and his doubts, okay? And Darwin wrote something called The Origin of Species, of course, which laid out the foundations for evolution. But did you know that he wrote two editions of this? It's not always really talked about much in school. In his first edition, he talked about, there's this grandeur in this view of life with the several powers having been originally breathed into a few forms or into one, blah, 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 blah. And his first edition came out in, the month is November, okay? And then he had a second edition, and in the second edition, where he says, having been originally breathed, he added, by the Creator, okay? He added those words, and then the rest of it is all the same. And I think Darwin had doubts. Darwin actually read his Bible an hour a day. How many of us do that? we just don't have time anymore, right? but he had a very strong belief. And in his day, science and faith were still meshed, okay? And I find it interesting that it was January. He probably went home, went through the Christmas season, did a lot of worshiping, and then he just felt compelled to come back and add that in there. Although you don't always see this in school, and it's not highlighted. And I checked a few libraries, like Zionsville Library actually does have the second edition, but apparently there are some out there that still carry the first edition for some reason. It tells a better story for atheism and evolution than this one, especially with all the heated arguments about intelligent design. They don't want words like creator inside their evolution theory. I just wanted to bring that to you. Darwin had some other doubts, too. He said, basically, if it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed that couldn't possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, that's basically what, evolution is all about, just things that slightly form, right, then his whole theory would break down, right? Well, in his day, they didn't know a lot about science like we know now. They didn't know all the details that we know. So, for example, Darwin talked about the eye, and he was absolutely fascinated by our eye's ability to focus on things and to take in more or less light, okay? And so if you compare what he knew then to what we know now about the eye, I mean, you can fill huge volumes on the physiology of the eyeball. We know all kinds of stuff about that, all the way down into the very, very low-level details, things on the order, the size of viruses and cellular what happens inside the cell, how the chemical processes go, how proteins are exchanged. All the stuff we know would just dwarf that. But unfortunately, you know, Darwin didn't have access to that in his day, but he even had doubts based on some of the simple stuff. So what do we do nowadays? Because we have all this information, right? Well, this information flows at you at a very fast rate. And you need to be conscious of that. Don't just take everything in and say, okay, that must be fact. You need to have a process and be cognizant of the process. And when things are important, slow down and help yourself work through and make sure you understand things, especially if you have some kind of doubt that might rock your faith. And do we have everything figured out? You know, do you think science has everything figured out? You know, the Bible was laid down years ago and hasn't changed, but science changes all the time. And at every point in science, you know, you go back in the 60s, yeah, man, they thought they had everything figured out. Well, now we have all kinds of different ideas, okay? The knowledge we had in the 60s is not like the knowledge we have now. So always keep in your mind, do we have it all figured out? Or maybe there's a higher level understanding that we just don't have. You know, are we like the cow? And God might be like this guy in there throwing the switch, you know? Do we have it all figured out? And for example, there's a new theory called string theory, which is a unifying theory. We don't have time to go into it, but it says a lot of things about multiple dimensions and about time and how time works. And actually, a lot of the things in the Bible kind of fall in place now when you look at string theory. You know, how Jesus can just show up and then just be gone? It actually makes sense in string theory. And so it's like, wow, we probably are like the cow, I think. And then God, he knows a lot more than we do, okay? And so we need to, and we can look into the Bible for hints on this stuff, right? God told us, he says, look, since the beginning, I've put all this stuff out there so that you could notice it, so that you know that I exist. God knows that we would have doubts. You know, in the verse from Thessalonians, he said, don't just follow the first prophet you find on the street. You know, you might be following a false prophecy. Test things, look at things, observe, use your brain, analyze it, and then you will see. You'll seek it out, and you'll find it, okay? God knows that. So take time to notice God's creation. For example, in my yard, I notice all the time I have all these mole tracks all over. And if you take time to look at moles, just for example, just one thing, they're really amazing. It turns out that the moles are bleeders, okay? If they cut themselves, it's game over for them. They bleed. So you ask yourself, how did that evolve like that? That doesn't make any sense. Survival of the fittest? That's stupid. That's a stupid evolution, right? So, and then you ask yourself, well, who would create something like this? It'd be stupid for God to create that. Well, then you look at this verse, you go, oh, no, I get it. He did this on purpose, okay? He wanted us to notice that. And the moles also have like the smoothest, I think, fur on earth. It's just very smooth. It's like this amazing creature. It's like, oh, yeah, only God could do something like that, okay, and pull that off, okay? And then you look around in the Bible, and it's like, oh, yeah, God says, hey, you know, my thoughts are quite a bit higher than your thoughts, and my ways are different than your ways. You're here, and I'm there, okay? That's just the way it is. And so there's lots of evidence, okay? You just got to look around for it. I'll give you another example. God does a lot with mathematics, okay? If you look into the world of mathematics, there's lots of evidence that the mathematics was laid out by somebody with extreme intelligence, okay? The way the equations are and such. And I'll give you a simple example. It's called the Fibonacci sequence. And, okay, the way this thing goes is you start out with 1 and you add it to the next first number, so that's 0. So 0 plus 1 gives you 1. 1 plus 1 gives you 2, 2 plus 1 gives you 3, and they build this thing called the Fibonacci sequence, okay? And then it turns out, you look around in nature, things tend to follow this sequence. You know, pineapples have 8 sloping scales. They go in a direction and 13 in the other. Pine cones have 3, 5, or 8 scales in a row, okay? You look at your hand, the ratio of the bones in your hand tend to follow this thing. They go 2, 3, 5, and 8. If you take this one as 2 units, and the next one will be 3 units, 5 units, and then 8 units for the long bone, okay? And then if you take this Fibonacci sequence and you take in, 2 numbers and you divide one by the other, you'll get this number 1.168 called the divine ratio. And the further out you slide in the Fibonacci sequence, the more precise that number gets, okay? It's like 3 divided by 2 is 1.5, so that's not a very precise version of the 1.6, but as you slide out further, it gets more and more precise, okay? Kind of like the number pi and calculating that. And so people have calculated this number out into the millions of digits, okay? Next slide. And they've calculated to the millions of digits like they do with pi. And then this number appears to be some kind of natural law because it's observed all over the place in nature. I'll give you some examples here. And it's been known about for hundreds of years. Leonardo da Vinci used this all the time. And in fact, probably if you take art, I'm a science guy, I didn't take many art classes, but I think if you take art classes, they tell you about this kind of stuff. And you can use this divine ratio thing to make your drawings look right and look proportioned correctly. And if you look around, like for example, the human face, you find it everywhere. The distance from the center of your nose to the edge, that ratio compared to the edge of your nose out to the edge of your eye, is a divine ratio, okay? It fits that ratio. And then the same thing in your lips and your ears, and it's all over the place. Then you look around like in pine cones, and you see that. You look in the galaxies, you see there. You look in sunflowers. Those things, you got to count a lot of them. There's actually like 133, I think the number is. But a lot of times, most of them have 133 little structures in there. It's bizarre, okay? Same with your teeth. If you look at insect bodies, they often follow this divine ratio. Okay? So, if you look around the mathematics, you have to trust me, don't have time, but it's the same way like in electronics and things. There's a few numbers like E and things that just are these magic numbers. There's about 43 constants, these magic constants that just seem to be there for tuning the universe, and they show up in everything. And then all the equations are very simple, like E equals MC squared. You know, it's not like a really long, complicated one. It's very nice, concise. It's just evidence that whoever did this had extreme intelligence, okay? Because usually the best designs are they're really simple, concise, and they're like a thing of beauty. I want to finish up by leaving you a thought that says, you know, look, you don't have to be a math or science guy to really to see God out there. You know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, we didn't have all this math and science, and people discovered God, and it was just fine with it. And you can do the same thing today. And then also today, you know, if you discover something you think that might be the signature of God, jump on the internet, Google it, you know, dig in a little bit deeper, and you'll just see it. You know, you'll start to go around that tree. You'll gain some knowledge on that. It'll lead you to find more evidence, and it'll just keep going and going. There's lots and lots of evidence out there. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. You know, Brian, let's try to bring this down a little bit to concepts that people can understand a little bit. You know, I know we all have questions, probably things we'd like to ask you. I know one that's probably on all of our minds is, when you're at work, do you wear a pocket protector?
Yeah, sure. Seriously, no, we passed on past those. Actually, I have a couple friends that have them, but no, we've all gone paperless now, pretty much, except for the whiteboards, Kurt. Whiteboards are still...
You have, I have not. You have. You know, we've got only a couple minutes, so let's kind of get right to the point. You know, you hit a little bit, you know, that sometimes what we read in the scriptures isn't exactly, there's a lot more under the surface than just what we read. I know in conversations you've said, you know, don't necessarily know if it was 12, you know, 24-hour days of creation where God actually put everything in motion, which tells me, you know, you don't necessarily agree with Genesis chapter 1. You know, that there are certain things in the Bible that may or may not fully be at least the way we understand them. How do you make sense? I mean, how do you have a faith when you don't necessarily believe everything you read there? Help us understand that.
Yeah, so you come to this point where you can't reconcile all the words, and you don't know if you're interpreting the words right. I believe that God did it, and when he said, like, let there be light, yeah, we write programs like that, you know, let this number be calculated. We even have voice control of things, so that you know, I can see how he could actually say, let there be light, and someone would pick it up.
Right,
we can do that now, today. And then things like, you know, carbon dating of these bones that are millions of years old and things like that, I think it's either going to come down to, I don't want to throw away my faith based on that. I think it'll come down to either like string theory and our understanding of time, or it might come down to something really simple, you know, like we might show up and talk to God and he'd say, oh yeah, sorry, you know, I was messing around with things before I actually created you guys and I left all those bones lying around, sorry about that, you know, or something like that. I don't, you know,
yeah.
I'm not going to throw my faith away. There's too much other evidence.
Yeah, well, and that's important for us to understand. I mean, we see something, we can't throw it away, because here's what many of us probably have experienced at some point or another. You know, we've been sold, we have maybe this shipwrecked faith where we, and maybe we've gone agnostic or atheist because we've said, you know, I was sold this idea that I have to have this bill of faith goods that has to agree with everything. You have to die on every hill that I read in the scriptures, and if I can't do that, then I can't have a relationship with God. And, and what you're saying is there's so much more there that we can actually understand out of the science side than what we can just literally see with our eye.
Yeah.
You know, tell us real briefly here, you know, when was a time when science challenged your faith? I mean, when's a time where maybe you had to go do some work? I mean, you couldn't just check your mind and be like, oh yeah, I believe that too because I believe everything else, but you really had to do some work.
Yeah, so the creation story part, that one was challenging and still a little bit of a challenge. And then the other thing I was challenged with is like just the number of world religions. And so I actually took a point in my life where it was actually when my daughter was in the youth group, and we had some. They did some classes on world religions, and so I kind of worked through that and looked at. I was really worried that, like, am I a Christian just because I was born here, you know, in this particular point on the earth? And so I looked through a lot of the religions, and what it came down to for me was actually using science to say, you know, the prophecy in the Bible makes it look like the Bible is correct. There's a lot of evidence in there that it's historically correct, all that kind of stuff made me believe the Bible was true. And then it came down actually to the Ten Commandments. It's such an orthogonal set of commands for how to live compared to like things like Buddhism that have their set of, like, I think five commandments, but they weren't really orthogonal. A couple of them were kind of repeats. They kind of sounded like they were made up by a human and not made up by somebody with divine intelligence and insight into the to the human experience. Mm-hmm. So.
And one more layup before we close. Have you found that your science actually strengthens your faith?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely does. Every day. You go out and you observe things in science, and it really depends on your frame of mind, you know. If you can chuck the evolution thing out of your head and look at, like, intelligent design and that there's a creator, then you can discover all kinds of things, and it really does strengthen it a lot. Wow. And then things like string theory are just amazing, because a whole bunch of stuff in the Bible just falls into place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's thank Brian for bringing his A game today. Thank you, Brian.
Yep.
You know, in just a few moments, we're going to sing some songs that just really pin us to our Creator. We're going to kind of continue what Brian's just talked about here. But before we do that, you know, my technology goes to, like, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, one of the places I spend my time when I have extra time. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been down there, but I just love that place. I love the speedway. I love racing. The moment I walk into what I call the hallowed grounds, I mean, it's like the hair on my arms stand up. You know, it's like the moment I see a car on the track, my head jerks wherever I'm at, and I'm like, I'm drawn to whatever is on the asphalt at that moment. And there's something interesting I've noticed when I'm down there is as much as I go down there and I'm drawn to the activity on the track, I'm fascinated by the technology and people putting their lives on the line, going 230 miles an hour. I mean, I'm amazed by all this. What I'm even more amazed by are these people that I see down there that wear these yellow shirts. I don't know if you've ever been down there and saw the yellow shirts. We have yellow shirts around here. Some of you are wearing today. Yellow shirts are like the workers down there. They're the people that are getting paid minimum wage to move the crowd, to tell you where you can sit and you can't sit, you know, take your tickets when you go in. And I'm always amazed that they're standing there not even paying attention to what's going on around them. And I'm like, man, how can you be down here and not be like glued onto the track? And of course it's their job, but at the same time, what it told me is there are times when we can be surrounded by greatness and just absolutely mind-blowing things and yet be numb to how great they really are. And it makes me wonder how many times, I mean, when Brian starts breaking this stuff down, how many times do you and I walk through a day where we're surrounded by greatness, and yet we're just numb to some of the evidence that there actually is a creator? In fact, I was recently reading Psalm 48, and I want you to listen to these words right here. The psalmist writes, praise the Lord from the heavens, praise him in the heights above, praise him all his angels, praise him all his heavenly hosts. Praise him sun and moon, praise him all you shining stars, praise him you highest heavens and you waters above the skies. Let them praise the name of the Lord, for at his command they were created. When I read that, I begin to realize, man, I mean, not only is it here, I mean, we got an awesome band. You guys haven't heard much of them today. They're going to do some awesome music here in just a second. You know, you guys, I know we're going to chime in many cases. We're going to sing some songs. And yet, man, this does not even compare to the anthem that the universe is singing all around us. doesn't even compare. I mean, right here, Psalm 48 says the stars, the moon, the galaxies are actually singing the anthems of their maker. I mean, that's mind-boggling. When you think we blow you away with our music, I mean, imagine the universe singing its anthem. If I consider this, there's this globular cluster named TUC 47, about 16,500 light years from Earth, approximately, give or take a few. And it's fascinating. It's about 120 light years across, filled with millions of stars. And it's just fascinating. It's pretty impressive what takes place. This is a closer up view right here of this globular cluster, which is just, they don't even know what to name it. It's in this constellation Taconica. I mean, it's in this constellation. There's so many stars, they can't even count them. And that's what you see right here. If you went out on a clear night with the naked eye, you could see this globular cluster. It'd look about the size of a full moon up in the skies, straight above, straight up in the middle of the sky. And what's fascinating about this is, as we study this, we try to understand what's going on, and there's all kinds of wonderment going on in the middle of this, these millions of stars, you know, 16,500 light years away from planet Earth. And yet, this globular cluster is actually singing the anthems of its maker. There's a guy by the name of Michael Kramer. He's from the University of Manchester. And he, as he studied this, he actually was able to notice that there were these millisecond pulsars, about 16 of them, that were coming out of this cluster, going through space and time. And he was actually able to measure them. In fact, scientists recently have said they're actually 24 millisecond clusters. I don't know that it really matters if it's 16 or 24. The point is that it's happening. The point is that there's actually an anthem coming from this globular cluster. And the Psalms say, even the stars and the moon will sing the anthem of its maker. Take a listen. This is what it sounds like right here. TUC 47.